Welcome to another great edition of Movie Madness. And I'm beaming with pride right now, not because of my guest, although it is a very special guest, but it's Irish Pride Day. It's St. Paddy's Day. And 49% of me is proud because I'm 49% Irish, which means I can get a scholarship to any bar in the city because Irish people have brought so much to society. Potatoes, boiled food, the Boston Celtics, 26 championships, I believe. But in honor of St. Patrick's Day, or St. Paddy's Day, if you're nasty, my guest, a fine Irishman himself, Harold McNeil. You may speak now.
I am like 2%.
Well, McNeil, Irish, son of, doesn't Mick mean technically son of?
It does, but
you're a son of Neil.
I'm not, though.
Right, I know. But you are a, I am excited to have you. And of course, I got to start right off the bat with a gotcha question, since you're a reporter. When did you become an enemy of the state and the people?
Third grade.
Oh, early on, huh?
Yeah.
No, I'm excited to talk to you because you're originally from New York City.
Uh-huh.
You're super soft-spoken.
Yes.
This is not like you at all. Do you need to warm up?
I'm just letting you feed me the questions.
Okay. Oh, I see. You're going to do rope-a-dope style today. Is that what it is?
Something like that.
Because for the record, let's set the record straight. We were both employed by the news, the Buffalo News, the paper of record in the Buffalo area.
Are you really?
Area. I do.
I didn't know that.
I do receive compensation from them. I don't know if I actually give them anything in return, but it's a little scam I'm working on.
You're a
wink,
hard worker.
Wink.
I've seen you.
But yeah, you're a reporter. You've been a reporter for how long?
About 35 years.
Wow. You're that old. Unbelievable.
6-0.
No, you look fine. You look fine. But no, and you originally came from
Brooklyn.
The city. Brooklyn. You went to the same high school as Spike Lee.
Spike Lee and Colin Quinn.
Right. So that's why you're like, you know, funny, because you went to school with Colin Quinn. So you're like, I got to be on Jason's podcast because he's hilarious.
It's funny. I didn't really know either of those guys.
Because they ignored
in high school. I remember seeing Spike Lee around. I mean, he was just some kid who at that time you wouldn't have paid much attention to.
Were you the same year, though? Same
no,
grade?
Colin Quinn and I were the same year, but Spike Lee was 2 years ahead of us.
Oh.
But I remember him.
But you never, yeah, you saw him, but you never had like a class with him or anything. He was. Just
I did
there.
Have classes.
What was the name of your high school?
John Dewey High School in Brooklyn, New York, in Bensonhurst neighborhood.
And that, for the record, is that Italian? Is that an Italian neighborhood?
It was. I think it's mostly a Russian neighborhood now. But for those who are a little older, if you remember the TV sitcom Welcome Back, Kotter.
Classic.
In the opening sequence, you would see a school that was New Utrecht. That was like our rival school, and they were in the same neighborhood.
Mm. So who's John Dewey?
John Dewey was an early 20th century educator who had some interesting ideas on how public education should go. Our school was sort of unusual at the time because it was what Buffalonians might recognize as a magnet school. And we didn't have a normal day like they had in other high schools in New York City. We started at 8 o'clock, didn't end till 4. We had free periods in between classes. And the whole idea was to learn at your own pace. And we didn't get grades.
Wow.
Which was pretty progressive for this was in the 1970s.
I think it's still progressive. I mean, they're still kind of working on that idea now, right?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, what's a magnet school again?
Magnet schools are schools that draw kids from around the city to specialized schools.
Oh, hence the term magnet.
Yeah.
Right, it's not like a district school. Like you just in.
It's not a neighborhood school.
Yeah, it's so. I mean, usually the idea though, it's kind of better. Is that the idea, or not necessarily? Or it attracts better students, or is that not a thing to say?
I think because you didn't have to get tested to get into this school. What you had to be was self-motivated, because again, you weren't getting numerical grades, and there wasn't a lot of pressure on you to you know, compete with other students. So you had to be self-motivated. And so they, it wasn't a psychological test, but you had to be recommended by some teachers and a guidance counselor from junior high school who thought you would be a good fit for an environment like that.
Right. So they wanted you to be a student that was willing to learn, though.
Like, right.
It wasn't like a, there was no bad, or I don't want to say bad kids, but I mean it was, everyone there was there to learn, kind of.
Well, sort ostensibly.
Of. Well, I mean, this is New York City in the 70s. I mean, did people get kicked out of this school?
I don't remember anyone getting kicked out of the school, and I also don't remember, which this is very strange, one fight in the 4 years that I was there.
That is strange. I mean, even in a best, you know, people, tempers flare, I guess, when you're...
It was very laid back. I mean, most of the kids that I remember were just very laid back, chill people, and not a lot of conflict. Not that we necessarily all were like the best of friends, but... I remember it being a very conflict-free environment, which is not typical, I imagine, for high school.
Probably not in all of them, but well, you're very. But that sums you up. You're a very chill person.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I think you probably were always. I feel like people's identity is pretty much formed when they're 10. So you're probably. I mean, you're laid back now, and you probably always will. I mean, you know, you got like, you have an inquisitive mind. You're kind of smart, I guess. I mean, around the office, you like to passive-aggressive, like try to bully me.
Oh, yeah.
But and then you turn around, and then when I give it back to you, you accuse me of being aggressive. See
right.
How you do it? You reverse it.
Isn't that
clever. Clever.
Passive-aggressive, yeah.
Yeah, I guess. No, that's fine.
Definition of it.
I enjoy it. That's probably how you like your adversarial-type relationships.
Absolutely.
That's how you get by. But you came here... So you saw Buffalo and you came here. What made you decide to come to Buff State?
Actually, I came here just after the blizzard of 1977. And okay. It sounds bizarre, but just remember I was 18. I come from a background in which people did not go to college. As far as I know, I'm the first person in my family to go to college. So I was looking to go somewhere. And I was making this decision very late. And I remember going to my guidance counselor who didn't think I was going to go to college. And
well, wait, I'm sorry, but what did your guidance counselor, he was like, what are you going to do, go to trade school? Or was he like, how was he guiding you? That sounds like poor guidance if he's like, you're not going to college.
The time period. At that time, or just before that time, you could get a pretty decent job without a college education.
Oh, I guess. Well, this is really before the economy fell apart, our fake economy,
but
I guess.
What I remember going to him, and he knew that, you know, the background I was from, I didn't have parents who had money. So what he suggested was, if you're serious about this, look through Barron's College Handbook. I remember him giving me a copy of it. Okay, I'm going through all these pages, and I came across the State University College at Buffalo. And I said, oh, the place where they had all the snow. That sounds like that would be an adventure. And then I learned that they had the program that I was interested in, which I, at that time, knew I was going into journalism communications. So here I am.
Well, you really
2 years later.
Well, let's dig a little deeper there. Well, I mean, was there a paper like at the high school then? Did you do any writing? You were always interested in writing or reporting.
Yes. I did that in school since I was in the third grade.
You had an elementary report?
We did. We had a monthly newsletter. I went to a school called Emma Lazarus Public Elementary School 268.
Where was that?
Flatbush.
Oh, Flatbush.
Yes.
There was a movie about that with Sylvester Stallone, Lords of the Flatbush.
No,
was that an Italian neighborhood too at the time?
No,
or is
at
it
the time that I was growing up, that was a mostly Jewish neighborhood.
Oh.
And it was changing over to a Caribbean neighborhood when I was coming along. But I had a teacher there. She wasn't even my teacher. She knew I liked to write, or that I had a facility for it. And she was a pretty aggressive teacher. She wasn't mine, as I said. And she said, you're going to be a journalist when you grow up. She just told me that. I didn't even know what a journalist was, but it sounded good. It sounded more interesting than a fireman.
Oh, if only you knew.
Yeah. So she put me on the staff, so to speak, of our little monthly newsletter, the Lazarus Lantern. And I did that from third grade till I matriculated out of elementary school. And I did a little of it in junior high school and high school. And the great thing about it was it got you out of the classroom, because you did have to go to other classes and other places, you know, to get stuff to put in the newsletter.
Right. Well, I guess that's how a lot of politicians start. They on student council, you actually get to leave class. And
yeah.
Technically, they like that.
Uh-huh.
But, well, that's good. I mean, that you really did know what you wanted to do, like a lot of people don't, and so early on. And even that's nice of the teacher to tell you that.
Yeah.
Maybe she was worked for that psychic. Maybe she knew, she saw something in you.
Well, I'm grateful to her. I mean, it wasn't as though I thought in third grade that I would actually, you know, be a journalist. As I said, I wasn't quite sure what they did apart from what I was doing.
Right.
I mean, in between, I was going to be a psychiatrist, an actor. I was going to, one of my goals as a very young kid was, I wanted to work in a department store. That looked like a fun thing to do. Dress nicely. And
I guess back then, probably like the men's suit area probably seemed like a good spot, right? Like
yeah.
Guys were in suits selling.
And it's funny because when I got to Buffalo, just before I went into journalism, because it was a bit more difficult getting in, more difficult than I thought it would be. I worked at the old sample shop on Hurdle Avenue. No longer exists.
I don't think sample exists, right? Probably
no,
not.
The whole franchise is no. gone for many years. But I think I started working there in 1982. I worked there just for 1 year before I actually got a chance to work locally in journalism. And that's all I've done other than substitute teaching on the side since then. But I worked at the sample shop, nice people there, but being a sales associate, as we were called at that store, was not what it was cracked up to be. It paid horrible.
What was minimum wage back then?
Oh,
like
my.
$2?
It wasn't even $3.
Was it? Oh, yeah. Cause oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously things were cheaper, but still, you imagine.
Yeah.
It's rough. So, but why did you come to, so you didn't want to go to New York City, so you came to, like, Buffalo.
I didn't want to go to Brooklyn College.
I mean, why did you want to get out of New York City, though? Just to get out of, like, change of pace? New York City is the most exciting city in the world.
Yeah, if you weren't born there and lived there your entire
all
life.
Right, I guess. Right, you've seen
up
it
until
all.
Up to that point, yeah. No, I did want to get away. I wanted to have the dorm experience, which I did at Buff State. I didn't plan on living here, but...
Nobody does. You fell into the trap.
I don't know that I fell into a trap. I got married very young.
Did you meet and the woman is from here?
She is.
Yeah, you got trapped.
We've long been divorced, though. But that kind of decided where I was going to live.
Well, yeah, initially. But, I mean, the 4 years at Buffalo State, good years, obviously.
Yes.
Are you still in friends with anybody you went to college with?
Friends? I mean, I still know people, people that I even work with that I didn't really know, but I knew of them. Mark Gaughan was there when I was there. He's a little younger than me.
Buffalo News reporter, sports reporter.
Sports reporter, yes. Byron Brown, who I did know. Our mayor.
Who? Oh, yeah, mayor. What term is he on now?
Gosh, that's just... His fourth term?
Man, Buffalo just is like, once you get locked in as mayor, it's almost like a lifetime gig, I feel like, unless you really screw up or until you leave. Did Mayor Masiello, did he stop running or did Byron Brown defeat him?
I think he stopped. I think he moved on.
Yeah, because, I mean, it was Jimmy Griffin, who was like a 16-term mayor of Buffalo, right?
Four terms.
Well, that's like 16 years,
in fact,
right?
He became the mayor. He was running for mayor for the first time the year that I came here.
And
Buffalo.
So you've seen like three mayors in the time that you've started reporting. In 20 years, we've had three different mayors,
yeah.
Which isn't a huge turnover, though.
40 years.
Well, there you go. That's a long, I mean, for three mayors, and I'm not saying he's doing a lousy job or anything, but it's just like, come on, can we not, I don't know, change is good, right?
Buffalo is one of those places, in my observation, that changes slowly.
And why do you think that is?
That's a good question. I don't know. I remember when I first came here, I was like, this, not that I knew anything about the 50s, because I was born in the late 50s, but I don't remember the 50s.
Right.
But I said, there's something about Buffalo that reminds me of the 50s. This is in the 70s. And I remember about maybe 20 years ago, there was an intern at the Buffalo News from the South, and I just casually asked her, so how do you like Buffalo? She goes, I like it. It kind of reminds me of the 70s. This was in the 90s. So, I don't know.
We are about, it's, you know, I'm born in Buffalo, and gosh, damn. Love it, right? Love it. Mm-hmm. As much as I can love something.
You should love your home.
Well, you should. I mean, this Buffalo love, it's like, yeah, well, you live here. If you don't love it, you should leave, right? But it is a little behind time. I mean, well, even our news building is very 70s. It was built in the 70s, and I don't think it's changed. Interior-wise, not at all. It still reeks. I mean, if you go to the fourth floor, interior, like, colors, bright, like some of the chairs, orange, like bright 70s colors, super 70s.
My first time actually coming in this building was in 1977, and that's a long time ago, but as I remember it, it doesn't look all that different than it did then.
But yeah, I mean, the trends, obviously we're not a trend-setting city like L.A. or New York, but I mean, we're about 5 years behind in, I don't know, music, fashion.
I don't know if all that's true. I mean, it's just this own entity, and it's certainly not unique in that respect. I think there are other cities you could go to that are very similar.
For sure. Well, I mean, yeah, this is probably like three. I mean, there's all cities across America like this, but I mean, this is it's an East Coast city, so obviously we get a lot of snow. So there's something about East Coast people. You know, we're a little tougher than when you got to endure snowstorms. You are friendly, like they call it, you know, the city of good neighbors. I don't know about that. But, I mean, you do kind of, like, just in case, got to rely on other people when huge storms are coming. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of check on your neighbors, that kind of thing. Or sometimes you get stuck in the snow. People will come push you out. That's
at the very least, I will say this, and I discovered this early on, it's a very open place. I remember, again, when I didn't have a car many years ago, taking the city transportation. And I used to find it so weird that you're waiting at the bus stop and people who are waiting with you just start a conversation with you. That was alien to me. Having taken public transportation my entire life in New York City, I never encountered that. And I thought, what is wrong with these people? Why is this stranger talking to me? I don't know you. But that's...
Well, I guess,
sort of the culture here.
Well, because it is a little small, like New York City, well, you know, bad, you start talking to a stranger, you might get stabbed in the 70s, right?
No, not necessarily stabbed.
Well,
it was just considered,
it's just that you don't,
too
in a huge city, yeah, you just don't do, because you don't have time, you might get sucked into something, but here in Buffalo, you're waiting for a bus, and people will speak to you, like if you're at the bus stop, most of the,
that's well, a I good mean, thing.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. I mean, you never know. It's good to be, yeah, we're, I mean, we kind of live up to the city of good neighbors, sort of.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, smaller towns are bigger. I mean, especially if you go even in this area, but like outside of Buffalo to the little, you know, the hillbilly places, the country places. You know what I'm saying.
You don't.
Okay, that's fine. You know, I mean, they're super friendly. Well, cause, here's an example to try to put it in terms. Like, I take sport, like I work in the sports department, so I cover high school sports. I take sports calls. And still in like down in the southern tier, like Portville and all those stupid Valleyvilles, you know, like usually we had, like the winning coaches here, like in Williamsville, only the winning coach calls, because once they lose, no one cares. But sometimes it's always the home team, like they'll call and make sure people get the score, they'll make sure other kids are in there, you know, like that's that kind of like, because they know everyone on the team, they know their parents, like it's different when you know someone, you know what I mean? Like it's still like homicide rates, it's still high amongst, you know, like you'll kill someone you don't know, right? But it's a little harder to kill someone you do know. I mean, unless you're married to them, then you really hate them and you want to kill them. But like studies,
I
think studies have found that if you know someone, you're not going to kill them.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much. I mean, wouldn't you rather kill a stranger than someone you? It's easier.
I would not want to kill anyone.
Well, but I'm saying, you know, it's easier to kill a stranger. I mean, I see the point of view. You know, in a small town, when you know everyone, like why? You know, it's just you form a connection because that's what humans do.
Okay.
And in big cities like New York City, it is easy to be disconnected because you're just like, I'm very busy, I have to go, all these people are in my way, and I'm rushing to the next spot.
Except that people in New York City live in communities. And I know the community I grew up in, which was a huge community, there was a closeness with your neighbors.
Yeah, your neighbors, but outside of what area you, again, it was, sorry.
I grew up in East New York.
East New York, what Brooklyn. Does that mean? I don't know what that means.
East New York, that's actually the name of the neighborhood. within East New York, there are more well-known communities. Canarsie is one. New Lots. I'm sure you've heard references to these communities. And
they still exist.
Pardon me?
These communities still exist, the names.
They still do, yes. It is the easternmost part of Brooklyn before you get to Queens.
But, I mean, you've been back home, obviously,
of
right?
Of course,
and, yeah. But it's totally changed now, right?
Oh.
Because New York's kind of vibrant because people keep moving
New
and
York
leaving.
New York City changes very quickly. My neighborhood that I grew up in has changed a bit that when I go back, I'm like, where did this come from? You know, there's a new apartment complex. There's new housing developments. And sometimes that could throw you off when, if you're like me and you use landmarks to figure out where you are. And I know the last time I was in Brooklyn, downtown Brooklyn, I can't even navigate it anymore because there's so many new buildings.
Right. And then, I don't know, this word is probably used incorrectly a lot of times, right? But it's gentrification. Like, how is that?
Gentrification.
Yeah. Well, especially when you mispronounce it. But, I mean, I don't know. What does that mean? Well, like, now it tries to, now the media, you know, you guys just try to use it as means that
there's,
white people are moving in. But that's not necessarily the case.
There's that. And, but in New York City, historically, even without there being major changes in, you know, the physical buildings, neighborhoods change very quickly. During one period, could be a largely African-American community, could turn into a new immigrant community within 10 years. I've seen a lot of that in Brooklyn.
Right.
Neighborhoods where I was like, oh yeah, I know most of the people who live here are Sicilian-American. Well, 10 years later, not anymore. It's a new group. It could be a Chinese American community, you know, which you don't see things change to that degree here in Buffalo.
Well, it is. It just things move more slowly,
yeah.
Like you said. But I mean, that's because New York's vibrant. Like, you always have an influx of young people who are chasing their dreams and trying to be whatever.
It's not just
Broadway.
Young people, but I mean, you get a lot of people from around the world.
Right, they want to go to New York City.
New York City.
But that's also a good thing. Like, I don't people like a lot of immigrants do come to Buffalo. They don't know, but that's because we had affordable housing and a low standard of living. But you know, affordable living. Mm-hmm. So that like a lot of Catholic charities don't they bring people from other countries here, and then that's how we get good restaurants. So it shouldn't. I don't mean.
I don't think it's a bad thing.
I don't think it's a bad thing. You know, new cultures, mm-hmm. new experiences, just people. You know, and I mean, did you find, when you first came here, though, I mean, did you find Buffalo a little segregated compared to New York City?
More than it is now. I mean, there's still, you know, lots of segregation here, obviously. But I myself have lived on the west side of Buffalo the entire time here. I always say I've never lived more than two blocks from Elmwood Avenue. And that's going back to late 70s, early 80s.
And that is the most vibrant part of Buffalo, though. That should be noted.
It's the part of Buffalo, particularly the part where I live in Allentown, that reminds me the most of where I came from.
Well, it is for all my out-of-state listeners. That is like the funky part of town. I wouldn't say funky, but Allentown itself has a lot of weird, doll-looking houses. I don't know what the architecture would be called.
There's a lot of diversity.
Diversity.
And old architecture, some new. Some really incredible homes, some not so. It's a mix of everything.
Yeah, and there's some great bars and some great
eateries. That, restaurants.
Yeah. Well, it has good walkability, though. That's what, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, some neighborhoods.
That's
here
a
in
big
Buffalo. I mean, in any
part
city.
Of the reason I live there.
Yeah, like South Buffalo.
You
it's
don't
just
be in
a neighborhood.
All the time.
Yeah, it's just residential, and you drive everywhere. I mean, here in Buffalo, if things are more than 10 minutes away, we're kind of like, nah, I don't really want to do it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, in Elmwood. Things do, you know, you can walk and catch a good restaurant and
mm-hmm.
go to a bar, stumble home, like I'm sure you've done many, many times.
No.
Listen, you don't have to deny it to me, Harold.
But I do.
All right. You're Irish. You know it. You got the last name.
2%.
Did you not go parading today?
No. I've covered so many St. Patrick's Day parades in the 30 years I've been here.
Which is obviously a little kind of boring. Like, how many times can you say? I mean, what do you cover? What, just like the different floats?
I was just discussing that with a colleague who was saying, oh, we didn't cover the parade today. And I said, you know, after you've written about it 10 times, what is there to say? It's sort of the, you know, and that's any parade, really.
Well, yeah, because it's just a bunch of people walking down in costumes, in cosplay. And you're, we're talking about the main, there's probably a couple different, but the big main parade in the South Ninth Ward, what is it? What's the?
Oh, yeah, the neighborhood parade, and I forget what it's called. I've covered that as well. That's usually the day before Thanksgiving. Before St. Patrick's Day, excuse me.
Right. Well, typical and in typical Buffalo fashion, it's freezing. Most of the time, still in March, we're looking at 30 degree weather. So, I mean, that's also what makes.
I do like the Dingus Day Parade, though. I mean, that's because it's something that kind of got made up out of whole cloth, and it just became this wacky thing. I've covered that many times as well. And just for the spectacle of it, I do enjoy that parade.
Did you say made up?
Yeah, because
listen,
I mean,
it's not
historically
made up.
There wasn't a Dingus Day parade. I mean, going back like 30 years ago.
Do you mean in Poland or here in Buffalo?
Here in Buffalo.
Well, it's coming from Polish things, isn't it?
I understand the culture. I'm talking about the actual having a parade.
Right.
That's sort of a newish thing. And I remember the first years was very short. And it's grown every year, and the spectacle gets wilder, and that's fun.
Yeah, I guess, until it gets a little out of hand, and then you got to kind of cut it back. But see, that's the Polish, it's Polish origin. So, I mean, that's why we have a big Polish, most Polish people here besides Chicago, I guess. But that's why you need different cultures, have different parades.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, in New York City, there's always a parade. Well, I mean, there's the Puerto Rican Day Parade, but then people get nervous.
Which I've never been to. I remember as a little kid going to what was called at the time the Caribbean Day Parade in Crown Heights. That was in the 60s. That was our big parade experience back then. And I remember enjoying that, but I'm not a parade person.
Well, yeah, because you're low key.
Okay.
for being from New York City, but you know, we also talk movies on this podcast.
Yes. Okay.
I don't know if I told you that, and you seem to know like well. Yeah, I mean, seems most of your knowledge from cinema stops around the 80s. But
I was going to say I haven't seen anything recently.
As an older person, you do fondly think everything that you kind of grew up in is the best. I feel like.
Nah, your lifestyle changes. Not everybody's when you get older. I don't really like how people behave at the movies.
I think we just... Yeah, but it's really not that bad. I mean, would you have one bad... Like someone was loud once in a movie theater?
That part I'm sort of used to. My neighborhood theaters, I mean, people talk at the screen and that kind of thing. But it's other things that... Where people forget that they're in a public space and they think they're in their living room. We're used to watching, you know, big screens on our wall at home, and the things you can do at home, you really don't want to do in public. But some people don't realize that.
I think that's a bigger problem in society, though. And especially when I say younger, you know, younger than like we're talking this last generation or whatever, the 20-year-old. They just act like, you know, especially the youngest people just act stupid. In my estimation,
I don't want to judge.
Well,
I can
you
only
know,
say what doesn't appeal to me.
I'm just saying. Have you seen people on air? Like it's a kind of an epidemic, right? People take off their shoes on airplanes now. Like, hey, you know, like my grandmother's generation, or probably your mother's generation. You know, like, ooh, airplanes, big deal. Let me put on a fedora, like
right.
Dress up.
True.
Now I don't. I mean, you know, I want to be comfortable. I wear
true.
Sweatpants, which
and they
is
encourage
like, but
that.
I keep your shoes on, man. Like, you know, this is not your home.
It's interesting. I think the last. Oh, this is going to be really sad when I say this, but the last film that I saw in a theater was La La Land. So that was quite a while ago.
Yeah, that was last year's Oscar, or 2 years ago. I'm sorry.
Yeah, or three. I don't know. But
I guess.
That was the first time I got to sit in these new seats that they have in the theaters. Where that
recline. The recline, yeah.
I'm like, wow, this is good and not good because... I saw people in the theater in their pajamas, literally.
Well, that's how people go out now,
yeah,
though.
And I'm like, but you're not at home. I mean, you're in a public space.
Now people don't care. Have you seen people on their cell phones at full volume? And then when they say something ribald and you kind of, you're looking at them and they're just like, they look at you like you're, no, it's like you're in a public space, man. I'm not invading your space or eavesdropping. You're yelling at the top of your lungs on a cell phone.
Yeah.
About your Which penis.
You shouldn't be
yes.
on a cell phone.
Or even people that use a cell phone in the public bathroom when they're in a stall. It's like, what are you doing? Just go to the bathroom. This is not your home. Why do you want to spend more time in a public bathroom than you have to? Wow. Get out.
That I have not noticed.
Because
I haven't spent long enough time in the restroom to
notice. Well, I do have to go to the bathroom a lot. I have a small bladder. But I've noticed. Well, I mean, you know, it's. I don't want to say erosion of common manners, but you know, I mean, you know, our society is somewhat coarse.
Okay, it's mores have changed absolutely over the past 40, 50 years.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't want people to curtsy to me, but I mean, we can.
How about I call you sir?
I don't mind when people call. I don't get all upset because I guess I'm old enough to be a sir, and you want to call me a sir, call me that. I mean, it's better than calling me nothing. I mean, are you talking about in general or like service people?
In general.
You call me sir.
I remember for a while that bothered me. I'm like, sir.
Why?
Are you trying to say I'm old? And now I appreciate it.
Oh, now you're Mr. McNeil. How's that?
I like it.
Well, what's your favorite movie, though?
My favorite movie?
I mean, you always hit me with these obscure facts in the office about like old time like actors and actresses. Like, I can't remember.
I can be quite a nerd on things like that. In fact,
when I walk by your desk, instead of writing stories, you're always on YouTube, like watching videos.
Well, not on YouTube, but part of my job requires me to monitor social media.
Yeah, for the record, that's part of his job.
That is part of my job.
Don't worry, no one from the news is listening to this.
But that is part of my job.
I know.
And every once in a while, you do get distracted. You got to be careful about that. But favorite movie?
Well, what's a movie that affected you in your youth? How about that? Is there one of those? Like, what was a big, like, I don't know, Clockwork Orange. Did you see that when that came out?
I didn't see it when it first came out. Oh. I would have been too young.
I don't know when it came out. 80s?
I think it came out in, like, 1971.
Oh, was it? I thought it was a little older than that.
And that was rated X.
Oh, was it? Oh, because of that
initially.
Scene? Yeah.
Oh, X was, people think of X as being a porno film when the porn industry actually co-opted that rating.
Because porn films
aren't—they were never really rated, but
they
understood back in the day that a film that got an X rating was totally restricted to adult audiences.
Right, you couldn't bring a child in, even if you, because like ours, with your discretion, you could bring like a 13-year-old if you want to see your child. But I mean, I think the porn industry now does have because XXX. Does mean anal penetration. Double X means just regular, like you can see penetration.
Okay,
and then
you're telling
X.
me stuff I don't know.
Well, I mean, there is a meaning. Like, there, if you go to a porn, like triple X is just everything. You know what I mean? And then, because you have some of those softcore movies where you don't really see anything, okay, but you just assume they're doing it.
I'll take your word for it. But films that were rated that had that X rating today would be like an R, in some cases a PG rating today.
Well, yeah, PG-13, you can say fuck like twice. There's a whole board. I mean, it's probably weird. I know they've done stories, but there's like, I don't know what their qualifications are, but like three people that review and they're like, oh my, this is like what qualifies as an adult situation now. I don't know.
I don't Anything know that much about the motion picture, what are they called? Rating Association?
The MRMP something, yeah.
And I remember when I was a teenager, well before I was 18, I got in to see lots of R-rated films. And I was never questioned. I remember going to see The Godfather.
There was probably porno theaters in the 70s in New York City. Did you ever go to those?
No.
Did you walk by them? Were they seedy? I would imagine.
If I visited Midtown, usually the 42nd Street area, they were all over
That's
the place.
That's where they were?
Yeah.
Where people actually had to leave their home to see porno? Those poor bastards.
Yeah. That was a weird place at that time. I mean, everything in the world
place.
Was going on
Ugh.
Out there around 42nd Street.
Oh,
Times
was that
Square.
You saw the ladies of the evening or whatever you want to call them?
Among many other very interesting people. Absolutely. I can remember in the late 70s taking some friends from Buffalo when I would go back to Midtown and just giving them the talk, you know. about don't do this, that,
Right, there was rules to New York City back then.
If you want to stay out of trouble. And I remember a couple of my friends from that era ignored my advice.
Consequences.
There weren't any serious consequences, but, you know, it made me uncomfortable because I was wondering, okay, this is not going to... I was thinking this is not going to end well. But that's all I'll say on that. It's a whole different place today.
Right. The first and last time I've been to the big city was, what, like 2 years ago, I believe? And, Times Square is just one big retail thing.
Disneyland, as some people
yeah, it's
like
gross. I mean, yeah, it's like really big TVs, screens, and then just overpriced stuff like an M&M. Although the M&M store is really cool because you can get any kind of freaking M&M that you want, man.
And see, I know nothing about the M&M store. Where is that?
Because you haven't
been
in Times Square.
Okay. That's news to me. Somehow, though, I walked past it or something.
Well, that's what you see when you go to New York City as someone who hasn't been there. That's what you do. We immediately went to Times Square and walked around and see the naked cowboy. Who's a cowboy who sings in his underwear? He's not fully naked.
And I'm like, he's still doing that?
He's obviously that's his only skill. He's not. He has nothing to fall back on. He has no writing skills, no speaking skills. He should start a podcast. Jesus, I mean, he's got a little name pull now. I mean, this is what it's all about. Is brand. Everyone is their own brand here in America. Did you think the day would come when you saw that when you were walking on 42nd Street?
No.
Did you even foresee cell phones?
No. No. I'm still barely able to use them.
Well, that's true. As most people in the news are. As we're desperately seeking the millennials to pick up a newspaper, we need people to know how to tweet.
Yeah, that's
Harold, learn how to tweet.
Happen, but
write a newsletter. Attract the people. Help us out.
Yeah. Well, technology changes. We got to change with it.
Well, so, I mean, do you rent movies? Do you watch any movies?
I do. I'm not as much as I used to. I mean, I always say that there's like this a whole collection of films that I want to see. A lot of the films, the mainstream films that were nominated for Academy Awards this year, I have seen none of them. It's like, okay.
Yeah, your fault. What are you doing with your time? What do you do when you go back to Allentown?
I have a house. That takes up a lot of your time.
Yes, as a homeowner, your lawn is very nice. I should say that. you distribute pictures of it.
It's something...
But shouldn't you admit, do you still read? Do you read actual books? What's the last book you read?
The last book I read was a book, and I'm forgetting the name of the author,
oh, Jesus.
Called The Darkest Child.
I think you were telling me about. What is that about?
I don't know that I want to go into it on a podcast. But
there's no restriction. There's no rating on this podcast.
I know. And I'm forgetting the author, which is really bothering me. And her story is what attracted me to wanting to read the book. I mean, she died pretty soon after her first novel was published. It's pretty raw. Raw in the sense of not raw in terms of X-rated material, but...
emotion.
Yeah, and it deals with heavy themes, racism, because it takes place in the late 50s in the South. And
your mom was from the South?
No.
Oh,
no.
She wasn't?
No, it's my
mom. But you have relatives in the South?
I'm sure I do, but actually, on my mother's side, my great-grandmother was born in New York City in 1886. My grandfather, her son, was born in Hudson, New York, and then he grew up in Harlem. My mom was raised in Brooklyn, the same neighborhood I grew up in, so our roots in New York City are pretty deep.
Oh, well, that's good. But you're big on that DNA thing, like tracing your roots.
I am.
You've done the 23andMe thing.
23andMe and Ancestry.com.
And Ancestry. So have they matched up pretty much?
They're pretty close. I mean, 23andMe looks more regionally than in terms of countries. And I take all of it with a grain of salt because I know... the African countries they identified me with being connected to, they didn't even exist as countries when my ancestors were brought to North America. I mean, there was no Nigeria in the 18th century. But if you look at your estimated results on an ancestry test, they might tell you, well, you're 32% Nigerian. And what that means is that the people who are there now, you share a certain amount of DNA in common with people in that place now, if that makes sense.
No, it does. I understand. I mean, I understand your desire to know where you came from. I mean, I don't have a big desire. I mean, that probably comes from my background. I don't care so much. I mean, not that I don't care. I mean, if someone told me, oh, your great-grandfather. I mean, I know I'm third generation, only that's been over here in America. But, you know, I just...
I was just curious when I first took it. I mean, I already had some sense that in the general region of Africa that most of my ancestors came from West Africa, places in West Africa. But I was also aware that there were regions and ethnicities that I didn't know about. Now, I'm majority African, obviously, West African, but 20% of my estimated DNA distribution, if you will, is not from Africa. And so it was just interesting to find that out.
Right.
3% Native American.
Yeah, you could have got a scholarship.
No, I couldn't.
You didn't pull. You didn't have any strings pulled to get into Buff State, and it was probably harder to get in back in those days.
It's a state school.
Well, yeah, but you know,
you needed a high school diploma.
Funny enough, though, a lot of famous people, like as opposed to like our university, UB, which is you know a Division I school, like more famous people have come out of Buff State that even aren't from. Like I think the old president of MTV went to Buff State. Like 10 years ago, I don't know his name. He's not the president of MTV anymore. But who's the writer from Buffalo, Fontana, who did Oz?
Was he a student at Buff State or UB?
No, Buff State.
Okay.
And he's from Buffalo. Richard Fontana? No.
I think that is his name.
I know it's Fontana.
No, Richard Fontana is the councilman.
Oh, the councilman. His last name is Tom Fontana, maybe? I know he went to Buff State. A couple other people went to Buff State. I mean, it's a fine school. Don't get me wrong. I know other...
It did well by me, I think.
Well, I mean, here's the other thing that I do like about you. The only one thing I really like about you. I mean, despite your age, because you're pretty old now, is you still have a good pulse. I feel you have a good sense of what's happening in our society. Okay. Well, you always have a good opinion. Like, I don't know. I wasn't shocked by this. There's a huge scandal. I don't know if you heard about it, about people bribing people to get into good schools like USC.
Wow.
Right?
When did this happen?
But, I mean, I wasn't even shocked, and I'm surprised that I was like, that's illegal? I always thought that happened. I mean, it always has been happening, right, for the past 1,000 years?
I was surprised by the method. I mean,
I'm
aware that schools like that have legacy students, if you will, and I didn't know quite exactly how they got in other than you get money. And I figured that's one of the ways, you know, because they use a lot of criteria for determining who gets in those schools. My daughter went to what would be considered an Ivy League school. She went to Vassar.
Well, that is an Ivy League school, isn't it? There's eight, right? Eight Ivy League schools. I can't name them, but or is it nine?
I assume that all of them were universities, and Vassar is clearly a college, but I don't know. But I know it's a top tier school.
Oh, nice brag. And she did it all on her own, academically,
yes.
I would imagine.
Yes.
Because you have no strings.
We don't have any
You have
money.
No pull. You have no money.
Nope.
You have nothing.
No influence, anything.
But I'm saying, well, I mean, didn't legacy that that even started as something racist, wasn't it? Just to make slots for like a long time ago to keep slots open at colleges for white people, basically. It's like, oh, well, if your dad went here, you're in, basically, to Stanford. And I mean, George Bush is one of the dumbest fucking people ever, right?
I
agree or
disagree,
whatever. Don't say anything. It's true. And he got into, where did he go, Stanford or Yale? Goddamn, I'm dumb because I don't remember. But he went to a good school.
Yeah.
And no, did he get on it? No. How did he get in? From his daddy, who was a secret CIA operative.
Well, all that speculation, I don't know how he got in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you don't. Well, no, I know you don't want to speculate on it because you're a very unbiased reporter. But, like, I mean, that's just how shit happens in our society. I mean, it's bringing, like, I don't know if it's the internet or the day of information. Like, Do you think society is headed to where it is? We will be a meritocracy one day, and no one will get it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're headed in the right direction, kind of, but people are kicking and fighting. Do you understand my question? You look perplexed.
No. I'm contemplating the proper answer for it.
I mean, it's not going to happen overnight. I mean, unless there's a lot of bloodshed. But I mean, you know what I mean? Like, bring this to light. You can't get into U.S. And first of all, like that chick. Whatever, her daughter was on a yacht at the time. The USC's yacht, the USC's admission officer has a yacht. How the fuck do you have a yacht when you're in academics? Like, how does he? That was a big yacht. How do you make that much money? I know it's college.
They get paid.
Well, that's a problem. That's part of the problem,
really,
isn't it?
Well.
Yeah, isn't that part of the problem? Yeah, and where's all that money coming from? Huge donors that are rich. Okay. I'm saying we should put a. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what your politics are, but I mean, if like.
And you shouldn't.
You shouldn't have so much money. Does influence things, right? Am I right?
Of course.
So I feel like in capitalism, they're like, well, I mean, the people that rail against taxing the rich the most are poor, stupid people that will never make $10 million. That's who is most upset. I mean, besides the actual rich people that will get taxed the most. But it's like they have this Republican mantra that's sewn into their brain, like, oh, well, one day I might be rich. No, you're never going to be that rich. I'm sorry. So don't worry about it. You just have to limit the influence of people.
What was that?
You can't have someone that's so goddamn rich. You can't have a spectrum of super poor as being bad, but also being super rich is bad for society, because look at the influence that Jeff Bezos has. Or even someone that's a semi that was on a shitty sitcom from the 80s, they have enough influence to get their daughter, who has no, she probably had no interest in going to high school. She definitely had no interest in going to college. Not that she's taken away, I don't know if she took away a spot from someone more qualified, but there she is in USC because of money and influence of her parents.
But we're always going to have rich people, super rich people in a society like this.
But
and I don't know what the prescription for, you know, huge disparities and inequities is, you know, that's something.
Regulation. I don't feel like people try to make regulation sound like the worst thing. There can be a cap at the very top. Can we not have a cap?
How would you institute that?
Well, I'm saying for every, there's no problem, I think, for every $1 million that you make after $10 million, or we even go up to $15 million, that it's taxed at 70%.
Okay.
I don't see a problem with that. And if one day, even if I did make $10 million or $15 million, I would probably. Yeah, you're looking at me weird. You never know. Can I not have dreams, Harold?
Sure. That sounds like a dream to me. I mean, your dream.
But I wouldn't. I mean, yeah. You just can't. Like, the rich people have too much influence. If when you have that much money, and it's.
And you think that's a new thing?
Well, no. This is a thing that we have to get rid of.
Oh.
As we're trying to move to a meritocracy where we're all ones, we all live in one jumpsuit, you know what I mean? And we're all based on what we say and what we do and our actual talent and skill, not who we know, who we blow, and how much money we have, or who our daddy is.
I get some of what you're saying there, but a lot of times in terms of who merits what, that's all pretty subjective.
I guess. I don't think it's right that so many people have so much money when you could do so much good with it. But that, you know, obviously, and then people just yell out, try to label everything socialist, and that is immediately shouted down as bad when it's not bad.
Okay.
I mean, if you had $1 million and your neighbor had nothing, would you not give your neighbor some money to live if he could not eat?
Well, of course.
Well, there you go.
And you're saying that everybody should be required.
Well,
that.
No, but I'm saying when you have so much more money that you can never spend it in your lifetime, what are you going to do with it?
I can't even fathom.
You couldn't fathom being that rich?
No.
Never?
No.
What would you do with, what if you were suddenly found yourself
it's
with $1 million?
Anything I've ever spent a lot of time thinking about.
That's because you got into journalism. Where salaries have pretty much stagnated.
No, I mean, I don't want to be poor, obviously, but I never spent any of my life chasing, you know, money.
Which is how you should spend your life.
Focus of my life.
You chased it spending your passion, right? Which is reporting.
Yeah, well,
or
yes,
doing your passion.
And doing something where you feel like, you know, you're contributing.
Because you have a soul. I mean, chasing money is a soulless, just pure money.
I'm not judging them, but I don't understand that.
Well, how do you get out of it? Like, obviously, you realize, you know, I mean, I'm in a very subjective. I'm trying to be into comedy, which is very subjective. Some people could say, oh, I really enjoy that. Boy, like, you don't like the cheese challenge videos. Or I made a hilarious video the other day where I got hit with a block of cheese, and you said it was stupid.
No, I didn't say it was stupid. I think somebody else said that. I said I didn't get it.
Okay, you didn't get it. But anyway,
at least you were hitting yourself. You weren't throwing cheese at a baby. You know?
Well, yeah, I would never do that.
Yeah, I don't get that. That's stupid to me.
Well, yeah, but I mean, now the parents will do anything to get on, get more hits on a video, which is almost as soulless as chasing money. By itself.
People like attention, even negative attention sometimes.
I guess. I don't want to take this podcast in a bad direction, but we should wrap it up because you have to go home. Thank you so much for coming down here today. What are you going to do with the rest of your day off?
I don't know.
You're going to go home and read? Go home and watch a movie.
Okay.
So we could talk about movies.
All right. Which one?
Oh, I don't know. See anyone you want. I don't want to, like, try to taint you. See a new movie.
Maybe I'll just go to the theater and see something.
I think, you know what? Go early, though, and you'll be fine. There's not a lot of people in the theater. Go to, like, the first showing at the Galleria.
What should I go see?
Go see Captain Marvel. It's about a female superhero.
No, I don't like superhero movies.
That's all there is.
I like things that are a little bit more reality-based.
Oh.
That's me.
So. Gosh, I don't even know what other... You know, February, January, you know that... Well, March is coming, so some good movies. But usually January, February, dumping grounds for movies because the Oscars are over. So maybe March, something good will come up. You can see it. You can come back on. I know you really want to compare yourself to... you want to make sure this episode does better.
Aren't we already in March?
Well, we are, but I mean, nothing really good has come out.
Okay.
I'll see if this episode gets more downloads than the episode with Colin. I know you're trying to compete.
I can't hope to live up to that. Yeah. But anyway, I enjoyed being here. I resisted you for the longest time because...
Well, I know why. No, tell me why.
This guy's out of control. I don't want to get caught up.
What does that mean? What does that mean when I'm out of control?
That's just who you are, which is why I like you.
Here's what it is. I just have an unfiltered mind.
Okay.
And I like to speak my... Well, you've structured a life. Obviously, you have a byline. So you do... You're trying to be... You're somewhat contained over there. I mean, I'm sure if I had a few drinks and you'd be a little more loose-lipped.
Yeah, I wouldn't be on your podcast.
Exactly. But, I mean, you are a reporter, and you do have
I have a reputation to uphold, yes.
Should we say that? Is that really true? What reputation? Well, I mean, I feel like reporters should be like movie stars. I think the less that we know about them, the better. Now that we're all in their lives... Like, you know, Gregory, like Johnny or whatever, back in the day, John Wayne, obviously, sure, he's a raging racist, I'm sure, but we didn't know that, or people didn't know that, and they enjoyed it. Now we know that Tom Cruise doesn't, you know, believes
it's... I don't think that was a big issue at the time he was a star.
He probably had other weird, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, Gregory probably believed in aliens, or had a threesome, or said he had a threesome, but he never brought it public. Now, like, Tom Cruise is jumping on couches, and it did hurt his box office for a while. And he said psychiatry is something from the Nazis, which actually might be true, but that doesn't mean it's bad, necessarily.
I like that this conversation has gone all over the place.
Well, I finally warmed up. I'm a little under the weather. I don't know if you can tell. So it took me a moment to clear that out.
Yeah.
But now we have to go. I mean, if I get a little too out of control, you won't say anything. You'll seal right up.
I'll just let you go.
No. Well, this was nice. And try to see a movie because this is a movie podcast. You ruined it. I'm not saying you ruin the whole podcast, because, I mean, obviously I'm in it, so that makes it enjoyable.
So maybe I'll go see a few movies, and then if you're desperate enough...
Yeah, have you back on. Well, no, you... Like I said, you are... or I said... Did I say that? No, you... I do turn to you for certain... You are, like... you have a good opinion on things because of your background and the person that you are, obviously, and the life that you lived. You have a good perspective. I like different perspectives in my life. And you do give me one as a guy.
As a curious mind, yes.
Sure. And you know stuff from the 70s and stuff about obscure actors. So is there anything else you'd like to add? You want to? No, just go to the Galleria like at 11 o'clock in the morning, the 11:30 first showing. No one will hassle you. Okay. There will be no talking, no throwing.
And then I can come right into work.
And come right into work and do your little report on your school board meetings. I don't mean to say that derisively as much as I did.
That's okay.
All right. Thank you, Harold. All right. Have a good evening. I'm going to go to work. They're still on.